Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, everybody. Welcome into the latest edition of the Six Rings and Football Things podcast. It is a live one-off Wednesday here for WEEI, Odyssey Sports, 2400 Sports. And on Six Rings is myself, Mike Cadlick, alongside Andy Jumbo Hart. We are here to once again pick a one-off topic surrounding the Patriots, surrounding the NFL this offseason, and dive into it a little bit. So given the fact that Patriots ownership is sort of, you know, in the crosshairs a little bit right now, given the last couple months where they parted ways with Bill Belichick, obviously they weren't voted, Robert Kraft, you know, they weren't voted greatly in that NFLPA poll. Cash spending has been down the last couple seasons, and the way that they come off in the Dynasty series has not been great. We figured it's appropriate to talk about ownership and just a, guess, overarching question of what makes a good owner. Because, Andy, I know you did a poll yesterday on Twitter, which is kind of the jumping off point here. So I want to bring that up because you mentioned that the public opinion on ownership in all sports constantly ebbs and flows. And we've seen it all around Boston sports. We've seen it in sports in general. So Andy took the liberty to pulse and poll the people, as you can see on screen here, asking Patriots fans, how do you currently feel about the Kraft family's leadership in New England? And a whopping 70.7% voted worse. I am realizing now, which is okay, because this is my opinion, I'm here to share it, that you can see my vote, which is it's been the same as the past, but you also do have to vote. You do have to vote to actually see the results. And so I played the fence per usual and said things haven't changed and it was the same. But yeah, 70% of fans in the sample of 2,900 said their feeling about the Kraft family as leadership of the Patriots is worse, only 4% better, and 25% stayed the same. So I guess, Andy, to start it off, curious on your takeaway from the poll and, you know, really just kick off the conversation about what's the deal with ownership here? What's the deal with ownership, you know, around sports in general and why, you know, the court of public opinion constantly goes back and forth against these guys?
So, first of all, I would have voted the same way you did. Okay. I would have said about the same. I also just sort of, as a very unofficial, I am by no means Quinnipiac or anything, but right. I kind of just throw out the 4% that say better. I don't know if that's bots. I don't know if that's Kraft family members, like employees. Right. I don't know, but I just throw that out and say that's like the statistical deviation or you know, standard of error in this, and say people basically either feel, because if you feel the same, doesn't mean you necessarily loved them in the past. It just means you feel the same as you always have about them. I feel the same in that I believe they're good owners. I believe that it's sort of like, you know how you can't win a game in the first quarter or period, but you can lose it? I don't think owners can win games. I think they can lose them. I think they can destroy teams and franchises and players and people and coaches and relationships. But I think you have to put people in position to succeed. That doesn't mean they will succeed. And it doesn't mean you have the right people in those positions. But that's what I believe the role of an owner is to some degree. And when we were sort of waiting and prepping for this, I started jotting down ideas of like, what is a good owner? Like, what are you looking for from ownership? But one thing I wanted to ask, because I do think we're in a weird, or not a weird, but a modern transitioning era of ownership where there's like new age owners, you know, the Teppers, the Pagulas, like these multi-billionaires that have bought into clubs, the exclusive clubs recently. And then there's, you know, the Rooney family and the Hunt family and sort of the Spanos family. And the Crafts are kind of in the middle. They're like old school new age owners with Jerry Jones and like that generation of buying into the club at, by the way, a great time to buy in. When you put $175 million, it's a record. And now you're worth, I don't even know what the latest, $7 billion, $8 billion, like whatever. So they're in that weird world. Like, we know what a bad owner is, right? Like, I'm pretty sure we can point to the Washington Commanders and say Dan Snyder was a terrible owner for so many reasons, on the field, off the field, the whole thing. But I don't know that we know what a good owner is because we just got Wayne Cram, Hunt family. Are they bad owners? They're so bad that they've won consecutive Super Bowls. They're going for three in a row. They have the best coach in football. They have the best quarterback in football. Like, that's what I mean. How bad are they? And are they just playing the business game that every other owner plays in every sport, trying to squeeze money out of communities to subsidize their riches? Like, is that a bad owner? I don't know. Like, and that's what
I because in turn, they're also, you know, skyrocketing the value of their team, which in turn, it's like, it is. It's a strange sort of fence to look at.
Like, they gave Patrick Mahomes a long-term contract pretty quickly in like 10 years, $500 million or whatever it was.
Right.
To me, isn't that a step towards, like, you know what you have and you're keeping it and you're keeping it happy. And so, like, when I was jotting down, because we also have, this isn't just about the NFL, because we're in the midst of Boston sports. John Henry, who is one of the most interesting case studies of ownership gone right and wrong in a short period of time that you'll ever see, right? Like, John Henry won with the Boston Red Sox. It wasn't thinkable. It wasn't possible. It wasn't a thing. It was like this dream fictitious chase, and they did it, and then they did it again, and they did it again.
Yeah, they did it four freaking times,
right?
And every single time they loaded up and spent money, for the most part anyway, 13 was kind of an anomaly, but put together some of the best baseball teams this century and won title after title.
So if I put out a different poll and said, who's the worst owner in Boston sports right now, who do you think would win the poll?
It's John Henry, and it's going to be like a 95 percentile. This is why this is such a fascinating conversation,
right? And you know, they've the new age business model, you can crap all over it, the Heim Bloom, and now the new era here, Craig Breslow, like what they're doing long term. Because guess what? If I buy into their plan at all, which I don't necessarily, but let's just pretend I do. If they're right, they're going to be seen as good owners again in 4 years, because they're going to have all this young talent. People are going to be going to Fenway. They're going to be winning games, competing for the AL East. If they're right, I didn't say they're right. It's sort of where we are with the Patriots. Somewhere along the lines this offseason, I think people realized, oh, we're not doing like the quick fix thing. This might be a couple years where, and again, if they're right, it's going to be the right plan. If they get Drake May and they get AD Mitchell, throw my guy out there, and those guys nail, guess what? They're going to look good again. So it's such a vagary, and there's so many. Now, I've said this. I cannot defend the fact that their families of the team eat in the tunnel and there's rat traps in the tunnel. Like, I just can't. Sure. Nope, not doing it. But does that one decision make you a bad owner? Like,
well, it's the same with the weight room thing, right? Because that's, you know, the weight room and family affairs, if you will, were two of the main reasons that brought them down in that poll, right?
But, right.
You know, spending money on the team, really, or, you know, where the direction's going in the future, right? Like, they hand this thing over now effectively to Gerard Mayo and Elliot Wolf. And like you said, as of Wednesday at 1 o'clock, and I know you're not supposed to timestamp a podcast, but we do it all the time, especially on these live shows. Like it is clear that, you know, it's not going to be a quick fix, but you know, because they didn't go balls to the wall and sign a free agent tackle, or they didn't do it with a free agent wide receiver, but they do seem to have a plan in place. And that is to draft a quarterback at three and, you know, build from within and pull up some, or, you know, corral in some draft capital, get the sixth rounder for Mac Jones and kind of build this thing from the ground up again. But who's to say that's actually an ownership decision? Because we don't actually know if he's even in their ears. And that's where it gets wonky. Like, if the Patriots stink for three seasons, it goes on ownership. And if they excel in two or three seasons, it's on ownership. But we don't really know whose decision-making that actually is. And people want to guesstimate and estimate that there's the Jonathan Kraft and Robin Glazer, you know, in the meetings and in the ears. But A, we don't actually know that. And B, frankly, I think that would make them a bad ownership group if, you know, stuff like that started to come out, because their responsibility, I would think, is to front the money, have the money, build a successful team, build a successful franchise, and get out of the way. But good owners get in the way and bad owners get in the way alike. And so it's like, I'm with you that I kind of feel the same on this, where the crafts are, because I think that from what I understand and from what we're told and from what we see, they generally do get out of the way and they give it to the front office and the head coach. And they say, you make the decisions, we get out of the way, and we can then hold you accountable if things go bad. And so that's all I've seen so far for 20 plus years. The only thing that we've really seen is he's gotten in the way of a few things with like Brady and, you know, stuff like that. But in general, it's the team ship. And so, like, I look at, you know, the dynasty is another thing, and I guess the cash spending is another thing, but we don't really know about the cash spending. And so it's kind of a no man's land sort of argument, because it's so wishy-washy in what they do and what they don't have responsibilities for.
Well, and that's where I would say, in all of sports, there's probably a small handful of terrible owners, a small handful of like truly elite owners, and then everybody else ebbs and flows with their GM, their head coach, and their star player. Like, you know, Wick Grosbeck would not be as good an owner if Danny Ainge hadn't drafted Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum with the third picks of the draft. He just wouldn't be. And I, for example, I'd go to, there was a little bit of, I don't know if it's backlash, controversy. The Washington Commanders have the number 2 pick in the draft. They have a new owner in Josh Harris. Josh Harris apparently sat in on the interviews with quarterbacks at the combine. I have no problem with that. I have absolutely no problem. It's the biggest decision in his biggest business. Like, it's a multi-billion dollar potentially decision. If he nails this, he's going to get the stadium he desires. He's going to get the wins he desires. He's going to potentially go to Super Bowls. He's going to, the value of his franchise, return on the significant investment he made, all of that. Doesn't mean he's making the pick. Doesn't mean he's meddling just because he wants to be aware, because he wants to see what's going on. Like, if you do a construction project on your home that you're not living there at the time, don't you still check in to see how they're doing, what they're doing? Can we fix that before we get too far down the road? I don't actually like that. I would like it. Don't like it. Let's change that. Like, I don't consider that meddlesome. Like, I think it's irresponsible to just be totally hands off, because it is your team and everybody. What's the cliche? Leadership starts at the top. Mm-hmm. Well, how can I lead if I'm not informed, if I'm not aware, if I'm not? So it is such a misleading minefield, I feel like, for owners, mm-hmm. where you can step in it quick. And there's no doubt in my mind, they have stepped in it with the dynasty. They absolutely stepped in it. It is what it is, Robert. I don't know what your intentions were. I don't know what your input was. I don't know if you screwed this up or if Jeff Benedict screwed you royally. I have no idea. I'm not going to pretend to know. Until somebody tells me definitively, I am not just going to presume and assume like everybody, oh, it was a Kraft production and he tried to pump up his own tires for the Hall and he turned. No, I don't know. Maybe it was. I don't rule that out. But I also don't rule out that Jeff Benedict and documentary makers who know that soap opera sells, like scandal
drama,
sells,
all that. Yeah.
I mean, I use the example with Rich Keefe on our night show. when you watch the evening news, that half hour, you got 28 minutes and 45 seconds of murder and mayhem and robbery and politics and jackassery. And then for 15 seconds at the end, the anchors sit there and go, and in good news tonight, the local charitable efforts, and they go like, it literally fades to black while they're right. telling the only good story.
Yeah, like the outro music is going on.
Right.
Like, yeah.
And they do their little fake smile and fake laugh and whatever. That's the way the media world works. I'm sorry. I think I even heard a song about it. Like, I wish good news sold or something yeah. like that. And it's, they were making a 10-part documentary that they wanted people to watch, and they're trying to lure people in it. Now, I think they were sleazy. Sounds mm-hmm. like they flat out screwed some players and misrepresented their tones.
But I still wonder, is that really ownership? Like, or is it the documentary maker?
I don't know.
Because, like, in the way that it's sort of come off right now is, and we obviously saw McCourty and Rodney Harrison talk about it yesterday, where they sat down each person for 5 or 6 hours and asked them a boatload of questions about the 20 years they were here. And now, granted, you're going to have to cut some. There's a cutting room floor, and you have to take out the stuff that doesn't really matter, and you have to tell the story appropriately. But for Rodney Harrison to sit and take 6 hours out of his day and to have the one thing he says be like that FEA thing is kind of nonsense. And McCourty said it too. It was 20 years and they took only the negative stuff. And like you said, bad stuff sells, like drama sells. And so that's the problem. But I don't necessarily put that on Kraft, because as Jeff Benedict, the author of the actual book, continues to say, it's much more than what was just put in the documentary. There was a full, the book is goes into much more detail than the series, where the series only has a 10 episode span and they pull out literally just the negative stuff. So Could they have added more of the good stuff? Sure, they could. They have put it, you know, made it a 20-part series and gone through anything. Sure, but at the end of the day, I don't know how much I put that on Robert Kraft and Jonathan Kraft, because I think Robert sat down with Jeff Benedict and told the story, the full story, and that's how Benedict was able to write the full story with the good and the bad. And I wonder. It seems to me that it's more so the filmmakers and more so, and I don't necessarily blame them either, because they're just doing their job. They're just selling the dynasty, and it's just kind of a crummy way. The whole thing's just kind of crummy, and it's a shame, because when that first trailer came out with the three of them, Brady, Belichick, and Robert looking at the screen, and Bill does his neck crack and Tom starts to cry, I was like, let's effing go. This is going to be sick. And unfortunately, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed listening to people talk, but at the end of the day, it wasn't what anybody anticipated, and it's gotten far more negative press than positive press.
Yeah, I flat out think they were sleazy. I think they misrepresented the players. I personally, and we've all written features, we've all done long interviews, and long interviews can have tones, then they can have outlier quotes or comments, like different things. To me, it's your job as the reporter, the writer, the director, whatever, the producer, to portray reality. And at the very least, I think whether it's a narrator, I don't know how you do it, because I know, okay, yeah, Rodney talked for 6 hours and most of it was boring fluff.
Right.
But at least let me know that he threw out boring fluff, or McCourty, he threw out boring fluff for 5 hours. And sure. then he said, like, that's how I would do it in a feature. Like, interestingly, after 4 hours of nothing but praise for Bill Belichick in the Patriot way, then Devin McCourty seemed to get painfully honest with, like,
about the Trump stuff and about the that's a good point.
You've got to at least acknowledge it, because if you don't, if he talks for 5 hours and you pull the salacious 5 minutes, I think you're doing him dirty. I think you're doing it like that.
And that's he said. I was duped. Right.
I love his retort. Because I think one of the criticisms when McCourty first, the quotes came out, people were like, what an a-hole. You turned on Bill. Nobody made you stay here. You could have left. And he's like, no, I could have left. I wanted to stay.
Yeah.
And like, there's reasons for that. And I told you those reasons and you didn't use any of those reasons. You just used the, and they took two of the great Patriots in terms of reputation of the era in Slater and McCourty, and kind of turned their reputations on their ear and made it look like they did Bill dirty, when really Benedict and company did them dirty to make them look like that. I think Benedict I don't know. Like, again, I also don't know documentaries. I don't know if he really is like the guy that day to day edits. Oh no, let's put this here. And then yeah, let's right. end this. If that's other people behind the scenes, but he's sort of the face of it and the mouthpiece right. of it. It's well, his
Hamacek,
project.
Hamacek is the director. Benedict is the author. So they kind of, and not that it matters, it's semantics at that point, but those two really worked together and took the book and interviewed these guys and turned it into this whole.
And they've done the media tour and they've done all the interviews. And to me, they look the worst in all of this because I think they, first of all, they did such a terrible job that no one's happy. Robert doesn't look good. Bill doesn't look good. Like, no one's happy.
Nobody looks good in this. Yeah.
No one really looks good. It's the damnedest thing. They were somehow successful for 20 years and you made it like, everybody's angry. Everybody's mad. It was just, I think Benedict and company didn't do a good
job. The one thing I guess I will give them a tidbit of credit for is that they haven't hid from it yet. They continue to do their press tour. They continue to go out there and they continue to defend themselves. And I guess that's something that I can sort of look at and say, okay, at least they're standing by what they did. Now that the series is over and now that it's coming out and guys like McCourty and Harrison are, you know, speaking out, I'll be curious even more to see if they continue this press tour and they continue answering questions because they continue to look worse and worse by the week. And
it's, yeah, they might just want to like go quiet. Go
yeah, hard, yeah, go seriously.
So to get it back to the overall question, though, of ownership, general ownership, there's a couple things I want to hit on. And CAB, K-A-B, just said, in 2024, it's completely useless to have any professional sports ownerships. I don't know what that means.
Me either.
But I will say, in one sense, I agree in that it's
you don't know what it means, but I agree.
Well, the Green Bay Packers don't have an owner.
Okay.
They seem fine. They've had back-to-back to maybe back, like, elite quarterbacks. They have underachieved because some of their quarterbacks may not have been at the truly elite level, but they go to, like, the NFC title game every year. They're always in the mix. They now have a third quarterback. They seem to be run quite well. They have like thriving businesses in and around the stadium, Lambeau Field, like the whole thing. So do you really need an owner, a guy at the top of the organizational chart to like yell at people? Right. Or, I don't know. And then my next question, and this was kind of the jumping off point yesterday when I threw this toward you. Mm-hmm. Who's the best owner in sports? Who are the good owners in sports right now?
The one I looked at and the one I gave you yesterday was Stan Kroenke, who has done a heck of a job with the Rams, and they built up the new stadium in Inglewood, and they won a Super Bowl, and McVay and Snead are great executives and coaches, and he's a guy who probably 5 years before, when things were hitting the fan in St. Louis and they couldn't get, you know, other stuff off the ground, was one of the most hated owners in sports.
Yep.
And like right now, I look at Stan Kroenke as sort of one of the better ones. And I think he owns another team or two, and I can't remember what they are because I'm so zoned in football.
Nuggets or Avalanche, a Denver-based
team. Oh, you're right, Colorado, because they also won a title a few years ago. Yeah. And he's just balling right now, and he's a guy who everybody hated less than a decade ago.
Yep. And he's
we talked about, sorry to cut you off, but the other one is Clark Hunt, who's the Chiefs owner, who has won two straight titles and three out of the last five or whatever it is. And he's hated by his team, according to that NFLPA survey. And people don't really know what to think of him.
And is a Nepo guy.
Like, yeah, right.
Family, like inheritance, like take it. And I do. That's part of the world. I don't push back as much on nepotism because I always say like, so it's a good thing if the plumbing van that pulls in your driveway says like Smith and Son Plumbing. You like that. There's experience. There's longevity. But you know, Kraft and Son football ownership,
right,
a good thing. Like, okay, whatever. Belichick and Son coaching isn't a good thing. The kid grew up in coaching. Like, he's been around the game longer than anybody possibly could since birth. That's a good thing.
So Kroenke also owns Arsenal football or soccer and the Nuggets as well. So he's all over the place.
Right.
And the Nuggets just won a title too. So
right. So, I mean, just by accomplishment, you have to put him in sort of the good ownership. He hired Les Snead, who hired Sean McVay.
Right.
Like, there's some of that trickle-down hiring effect. But, I like, Jerry Jones is a polarizing one. I think he is kind of thrown in there more often than not as, like, a meddling prima donna, whatever.
Hands all, like, literally the GM of the team, like, hands all over the operation. Right.
And I think most would argue they're one of the most talented teams in football on an annual basis. They don't win. Now, I don't know if that's ownership, if that's coaching, if that's his decision making in coaching, right? Like, he picks the coaches and he sticks with them. So the fact that he stuck with Jason Garrett too long, or he's sticking with Mike McCarthy too long and could have had Bill Belichick, that's on the owner. So maybe he's a bad owner for that reason.
But flip it, and when guys churn through coaches every two seasons, they say, well, give these guys a damn chance. Give these guys a damn chance. You're a bad owner. Right.
And that's why I think it's such a gray area of what decisions are good. Now, I also go back to quarterback, superstar. You know why Stan Kroenke is good as an owner of the Denver Nuggets? Because Jokic is the best effing player on the planet.
Right.
He's re-goddamn-diculous.
Yep.
Tom Brady was the best effing player on the planet. He's re-goddamn-diculous. If you get yourself a re-goddamn-diculous player in any of these sports, instantly you're like 25% at least better owner. Right out
the Rams, or the Avs had studs on both sides of the ice, offense or forwards and defense. And then the Rams, right? Like, they built a stud team, and then they go get Stafford and they win it all. Like, it's ultimately about who's on the floor.
Oh, Aaron Donald's a good player. That's interesting. He's on a good team. Yeah. So there's such a – it's like the – coach and quarterback. Ah, Bill Belichick's done nothing without Tom Brady. Bill Walsh was really good with Joe Montana. Like, they're so intertwined. And I do think talent, especially if you just go to the totality of sports, talent trumps. Mm-hmm. Like, getting talent, securing and keeping talent. And that's part of an owner and a GM, and that's part of their jobs. But so I started to put together like a list, and I don't know how you feel about this.
Okay.
So, like, the first thing I said as a fan that I think makes a good owner is to care, like, have some passion, like, be not financially in just invested in your team, but be invested, like, be. And Robert, I think, checks that box. He loves to tell us. He used to sit on the metal bench seats at Foxborough Stadium, and he was a season ticket holder. And I believe him when he beats that dead horse home to us in every story he tells. He is. And I think that makes him, it's a first step towards being a better owner, just like I think Wick Grosbeck is a passionate Celtics owner. I think he cares about basketball. I think the fact that these guys you see it night in and night out at the game, doesn't that tell you something? Like, I'm not even sure I would want to go to 82 Celtics games or 162 baseball games. Now, 16, 17 football games, I would. It's weekly. It's easy. But like, Wick Grosbeck's always in the crowd. I think that is of value. I think that,
and I know we're sticking on Boston too, but like, when Cuban was high up in Dallas, right? He would be there with a Mavs t-shirt, like, every single game, like, cheering the team on when he has $1 billion and a billion different other things going on. And he was still courtside at Mavs games all the time.
Sure. Now, conversely, the Jacobs family out of Buffalo was sort of an absentee ownership group, and that's how the Bruins were run. And the Bruins were run like a business from afar. And, you know, there was sort of this idea, like, just be competitive, just make sure the money's coming in, maybe make the playoffs, but we're not necessarily all in to win it. We're not going to extend ourselves past normal business procedures. And they weren't overly successful for a long time in sort of the 80s, the 90s, and in that ownership group. And now they're still a little bit distant, but the son, Charlie. Jeremy was the absentee owner. Charlie has taken on a more sort of active and invested role. Like, so I think caring and passion matter. Like, and that's where John Henry, again, he's a carpetbagger. He came, he bought the Red Sox. It's a business. It's part of his portfolio. The whole damn, he doesn't even hide it. It's Fenway Sports Group, and we're doing all this. And like, I don't think he hides it. He's not well
liked. Like, the main logo of Fenway Sports Group has like all the sports teams and enterprises underneath the word Fenway. Right. It's like, come on, dude. Yeah.
And I know the Crafts have other businesses, but they're at Gillette Stadium every Sunday and they're, you know, bitching and sad, you know, sad face, puffy black jacket, Robert Kraft, sad face. Has John Henry ever been in a meme because he was so sad that his team sucked? No. Right.
And there's also too with that, like, there's more of a conflict of interest with Fenway Sports Group than there is Kraft Sports Group, because Kraft is the football team, the revolution, I guess, and then like paper products, where Fenway Sports Group is different cities crossing different nations, crossing different sport. Like, it's just like, it's all clumped up in one big sports group that it can get in the way of the other ones more. So.
And that's, I'm glad you brought up the Revs, because for years, there's been a bit of a divide. Revs fans hate the Crafts. Maybe hate's a strong word, but Revs fans seem to have a lot more problems with the Crafts and their ownership than Patriots fans, or at least than Patriots fans did. Now, 70% now feel worse about Robert as the owner and Jonathan as the leader. But, and a lot of that stemmed from lack of investment in the team, can't get a stadium built, the experience. Oh, why do we see other teams bringing marquee global soccer players to the MLS and we're kind of penny pinching and, you know, putting together a roster on the dime? And there were a lot of frustrations. And there was definitely a divide there between Revs fans, Patriots fans, and how good the Crafts were at their jobs. Same guys, Robert and Jonathan, same people running both teams, maybe with similar frugal business mindsets, right? And it is a business. I do always go back to that. Like, as much as we say we want, I'll give another example. Steve Cohen, the Mets. Mm-hmm. He is who we all want to have as an owner. Like, he's buying it. He's investing. I use the story. Somebody said to him, I believe a fan was like, they should put a roof on Citi Field after it was already built. You know what he immediately did?
Yeah.
Called a consulting firm and was like, hey, could we put a roof on this place? And how much would it cost? And how would it? And it was like sky high, ridiculous amount of money. You can't just add a roof later. It's stupid. But his first instinct wasn't to say no. It was to like, well, let's see how much.
Yeah, let's look at it. Yeah.
Like, and all the money they put into the roster, it sucked. It blew up. They blew the whole thing. It was a waste. But I want my guy to swing. I want him to try. I want him. And again, it may blow up. And I guess I'm being somewhat hypocritical or counter, because I'm like, oh, the Patriots are taking a conservative approach and this may work in 2 years.
Isn't, though, David Tepper the football version of Steve Cohen?
A little bit.
He's going to spend all the money he wants, and he's getting new facilities, and he loves the team, and he's there, and he'll fire a coach after 9 games if it ain't working, and he'll spend the money, and he says, no, I want Bryce Young because I think he's better, and, like, all of a sudden that team's a dumpster fire, and they stink, and, like, it's a disaster because he's so involved, because he is also very, very passionate.
And I also think, and I think Robert Kraft has – spoken on this, you evolve as an owner. You make mistakes early on in your tenure when you're a fan and when you're a rich guy and when you're, I don't know, poking football people like Bill Parcells, and you think you know the sport, you know the industry, you know the game, you get manipulated or you make mistakes. Experience matters in every walk of life. I'm sure Robert feels like he's a better freaking paper company owner now than he was 30 years ago, just like he's a better Patriots owner now than he was 30 years ago, even if fans would disagree. Right. So Tepper is in that honeymoon period, or whatever the opposite of a honeymoon period, like the meddlesome period. Yeah. Or because I think there was some of that with the Pegulas in Buffalo. They had some missteps and there were complaints and issues, and they have the issue where they're running both teams and they have people doing both jobs. And you have that in various places, the Saints and the Pelicans, mm-hmm. where there's cross ownership groups, which I also think is interesting. Are the Bills better because the Pegulas are good owners and the Sabres suck because the Pegulas are bad owners? Like,
right.
Well, the same people.
I think, and the moral of the story of, I guess, the conversation and the title of the podcast is what makes a good owner, but
talent.
Yeah, I was going to say, realistically, there is no right answer. There is no wrong answer. It's subjective to each team, each city, each sport. It changes over time. It ebbs and flows. And as long as you win, I think that's what's going to, again, talent and winning is what's going to make you objectively considered a good owner and a good team.
I would say I believe stability and consistency matter. But I actually think that's not unique to NFL owners. That's unique to, like, if you have a parent, just be consistent, as my dad, like, don't change the rules on every other day. As a coach, like, make it clear what your expectations of me are. As a boss, make it clear what your expectations and stick with it. Because if you're helter skelter up and down and high and low, no one's happy. We can't do our jobs. Like, and I think for an owner, even if you're a little meddlesome, just like be consistent with it. Even if you're a little whatever. Stable, consistent, like, so people know what to expect. They know what you're looking for. Not if you're all over the map, and that this may be another John Henry thing, because they've ebbed and flowed with, like, their sort of team building philosophies of spending and different things over the years. I don't know that that works. I think that might be mine. Those might be my two tenets. If I had to pick two things I want in an owner, it'd be care, passion, investment, whatever you want to call that piece, and stability and consistency. Yeah. And I think if you give me those two things, we'll figure it out. We'll find good employees. We'll find a good GM, a good head coach, and a good star player along the way, hopefully. And when we do that, like Mike Brown. Yeah, he was one shitty owner until he got Joe Burrow. Now he's
exactly
a good owner.
Right. It's bizarre. It is. It's a bizarre conversation. You know, it has to be talked about, especially with everything surrounding the Crafts and the Patriots right now. But at the end of the day, they're going to be here. They may turn this thing around. They may not. They're going to get blamed for things they should get blamed for. They're going to get credit for things they shouldn't get credit for, and vice versa, right? And yep. So that's kind of where I sort of stand on the thing. It's hard to judge. They make mistakes. They make bad decisions. They make good decisions. And that's just kind of what you have to deal with in sports and ownership in general.
Which is really no different than a coach, a player. Right. Like, oh, my quarterback threw a pick. Does he know why he threw a pick? Like, can he learn from it? Will he not throw the pick next time? Or is he, as Bill Belichick used to say, an error repeater?
The only thing I push back on there, though, is like coaches, GMs, players can all be held accountable and then subsequently fired for their actions and things they do wrong. Owners can't. They get time after time, mistake after mistake. And if they want to keep swinging and missing, they're allowed to. And unless they do something egregious like a Dan Snyder, and that's, you know, outside of football and business operations, doing like objectively bad things, and you can get voted out.
Right.
Other than that, you're going to continue to keep swinging and keep missing until you decide to sell the team.
Well, that's, you know, that old saying, like, owners own and everybody else rents. Like,
yeah,
they earned that right somehow, some way. They either inherited it, or they made a lot of money in some other business, or they got lucky and got in at the right time. And we should mention that there is that outlier group of racist,
of course,
sexual yeah. harassment. Like, that's right. A whole different criminal world or whatever you of want. Course. We're not really talking about that. Yeah.
That's not this conversation. What makes a good owner is staying out of the weeds and like legal operations. Yeah. Shit like
yes.
That, right?
Yeah. But we also, the one last thing I would like to bring out. This is why we talked about it. Mr. Bruin Man 86, who, based on his name, knows about some questionable ownership over the course of his life. The Crafts need to be careful. Pulling a John Henry and shoveling dirt on the grave of Bill is a terrible look. Again, we talked about a little bit earlier. Is it the Crafts? Is it all the Crafts? Was Benedict doing what he thought the Crafts wanted? Was it a directive? He denies it was like directed by Robert Kraft. Who knows? But I do want to throw another layer in there, and you touched on it just a little bit earlier. We also have Robert Kraft at the age of 82, and there's a transition of power happening, has been happening, coming fully at some point to Jonathan.
Right.
And that's another issue. Like, how does Jonathan feel and act taking over for his father? They have very different personalities. They have very different leadership styles. I can tell you this from firsthand experience. And that's going to be another aspect of consideration for the Patriots, is when Jonathan is day to day fully in control, when Robert is gone. And right. I don't say this with any glee, like literally dead and buried. At some point, Robert will not be part of this. He can't be a mentor. He can't be an advisor. Mm-hmm. He can't be Jonathan's like angel on his shoulder. Jonathan's going to be flying. I mean, I'm sure his brothers will impart their advice, but it's going to be different when Robert is gone. And I don't know if that's better, worse, same. We'll see, but that's another aspect of the Patriots ownership that's going to change.
That's a good point, because we give Robert the credit and the blame for different things, and the fact that he's, you know, not switched up and given people, I guess, not the benefit of the doubt, but, you know, as I mentioned before, he gives Bill an opportunity to make decisions on his own and then can hold him accountable and sticks by him and doesn't want to make rash decisions and measures nine times, cut once, and does all this stuff we talk about with Robert. We don't know what Jonathan's going to do. Like, we have no idea. So then when that time ultimately comes, then we'll have this conversation once again on, you know, whether he is actually a good owner, bad owner, or, you know, where the team and what direction that goes in moving forward.
And as John Haversack simplifies it, one who spends to win is a good owner. Robert has been poor ever since Brady walked away. Well, I mean, he spent money a few years ago. It didn't work. Yeah. He spent $200+ million. And we just talked about Steve Cohen spending all this money. And I mean, the the San Diego Padres. The sports world is littered with owners who spent money because they thought that was the key to being a good owner. And there's a lot of regrettable decisions that were made right. in that it's not that simple. It just isn't. It's not simple at all. It's a complex reality where they deal with personalities, athletes, finances, landscapes, changing landscapes, media. Like, there's so many layers to it. You know how everybody bitches, not bitches, but when they become a head coach, they're like, I never realized how much a head coach has to do. Yeah. I want to just go back to being a position coach where I can just coach. Well, ownership is another layer up for that, because you deal with basically everything the head coach deals with, but then the business and the marketing and the tickets and the sales and the stadium and, oh my God, are we over leveraged on our mortgage, on our payments? And we got to do this, the rates, like,
right.
There's just so much
popcorn per pound, like literally like all this other nonsense. Right. Right.
And yeah. I'm not shedding a tear for them. They're making boku dinero, right. But there's a lot of crap going on in their world. There is a lot of crap. So I think it's very difficult to be a good sports owner. I'd be terrible. I think I'd be too impulsive, too reactionary, too many things. I'd be a bad owner.
I'll be David Tepper.
Probably.
Okay.
Probably. It is what it is.
It is. And it's an impossible task. And I think that's where we can leave it, because you're going to be in people's good graces. You're going to be in people's bad graces. Robert Kraft is in the bad graces right now because of several things that have happened over the course of the last 3 months. And it's up to him and up to the people that, you know, he's putting in charge of his football operation, you know, to really turn this thing around and put him back in the good spirit. So, anything else before we get out of here, Andy?
No, I think we had a good, I mean, that was like a, like almost like a classroom forum, like open discussion on just, that was good. We should take this on the road. College campuses everywhere. We're just going to have these one-off Wednesdays coming to Tufts University.
We'll go to each and every, we'll go to local campuses and explain why there's more to ownership group than, you know, just spending money and not spending money. So that'll do it for one-off Wednesday here on Six Rings of Football Things. While you're all here, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to the Six Rings podcast wherever you get your podcasts, on the Odyssey app. Subscribe to YouTube at WEI Video, and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Six Rings Pod. We will be back later on this week on Six Rings, as well as next week, as this Patriots offseason continues to trickle along. Mock drafts, free agents, potential trade targets, things like that. We'll talk all about all of it here on Six Rings and Football Things. So for Andy Jumbo Hart, I am Mike Kadlec. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for watching. And we will talk to you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.